Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Ezekiel chapter 31, which I will call Pharaoh to be slain. The time of this prophecy is, as verse 1 tells us, in the 11th year in the third month on the first day. So to orient us a little bit, that's the 11th year of Ezekiel and Jehoiachin's exile to Babylon. That exile happened in 597. Jehoiachin was the three-month king that was taken into exile. Zedekiah was put on the throne in his place by the king of Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar. So in the 11th year, 597 minus 11 puts you just around 586. Now, so already we're somewhere around the time that Babylon destroyed Jerusalem. This prophecy was given in the same year that the previous prophecy concerning Egypt was given in the last chapter, starting at verse 20. In the 11th year, in the first month, on the seventh day of the month, the 11th year of the first month, at the end of chapter 30, the beginning of chapter 31, in the 11th year of the third month. So we're a couple months later after the last prophecy. There were two prophecies in the last chapter. The first prophecy, the date wasn't given. But all these prophecies are given just around the time that Nebuchadnezzar came in and swooped down on Jerusalem and destroyed it in 586. Now we can be more precise. This prophecy here in Ezekiel 31 was given a little over 2 months before Jerusalem was fired by the Babylonians. We read in Jeremiah 52 verse 12, on the 10th day of the fifth month, that's the fifth month is Av, which was the 19th year of King Nebuchadnezzar, that's 586 B.C., Nebuzaradan, the commander of the guards, entered Jerusalem as a representative of the king of Babylon. He burned the Lord's temple, the king's palace, all the houses of Jerusalem, and all the houses of the nobles. In other words, he toasted the place, and that was on the 10th day of the fifth month of 586. This prophecy in chapter 31 is in the third month of 586. So from the fifth month to the third month is 2 months. So there's 2 months to go before Babylon comes in and does its dirty work on Jerusalem. Actually, that's irrelevant to the prophecy because this prophecy is against Pharaoh Hophra of Egypt. And we're going to see that Ezekiel is going to spend 17 verses talking about Assyria going down as an object lesson for when Pharaoh is going to go down. So with that background behind us, except for one thing, let me talk about the third month on the first day when this prophecy was given. The third month is Siwan. I just learned how to pronounce Hebrew. I've been studying a little bit of Hebrew since doing this podcast. I realized it would really have been nice if I'd have known Hebrew before I started, but I didn't. So I started studying, and so the old classical Tiberian pronunciation, how the Masoretes did it, was Siwan, I hope. All right, enough rabbit trails. Let's begin now in verse 2. Yahweh is speaking to Ezekiel, and he says, Son of man, I'm going to take one verse at a time and go through here without reading it first, because this chapter is relatively easy. Son of man, why did Yahweh speak to Ezekiel that way and call him the son of man? Well, there are two theories on that. The first theory is that God is trying to make Ezekiel humble, because son of man means, Ezekiel, you have the characteristics of a man. You've inherited a man's character, and man is fallible, weak, foolish, and so forth. Therefore, Ezekiel, even though I've given you a caboodle of prophecies from the throne room of God, don't be getting the big head about it. You need to stay humble. That's theory number one. I don't like that theory. Theory number two, God is trying to make Ezekiel a type. I shouldn't say trying. He does make Ezekiel a type of the Son of Man in the New Testament, who was Jesus. He called himself by that term all the way through the Gospels. Jesus got the term from Daniel 7:14, which says the Son of Man ascended to the Ancient of Days. And so it was a messianic term that all Old Testament readers knew about. And so Jesus appropriated that name for himself so that people would think, when they heard Son of Man, they would think Messiah. Oh, Jesus is the Messiah. And Ezekiel makes a good type. He's preaching to the rebellious house of Israel most of the time, not in this chapter, but in most of the time he's doing that. But in much of the time he's doing that, he's also preaching about the burning of Jerusalem in 586. Well, Jesus did the same thing. He preached to the rebellious house of Israel, and then he predicted the destruction of the rebuilt temple in Jerusalem in AD 70. as he gave his Sermon on the Mount. So, in verse 2, Yahweh says, "Ezekiel, son of man, say to Pharaoh, king of Egypt." Now, Ezekiel never saw Hophra, Pharaoh, king of Egypt, personally to do this, so Ezekiel must have had an opportunity to send a written copy to Hophra. The prophecy was written down. After all, we're reading it right now. So that's probably how Hophra got news of his demise. Whether he believed it or not is another thing. God says to Ezekiel, "Say to Pharaoh and to his hordes." Egypt had a very large population. They were major players in the ancient Near East. And God symbolizes that by saying at the end of verse 2, "Who could be compared with you in majesty?" Well, God's going to take Assyria to compare with Egypt in majesty, because, of course, Assyria was a tremendously large empire in the ancient Near East. It preceded the Babylonian Empire and was conquered by Babylon. The remnants of it were wiped out at the Battle of Carchemish in 605 BC, and we're in 586. So Assyria's already gone down, but just recently. And so it's a perfect metaphor for God to use for Egypt, because it was a great nation, like Egypt was, and it's gone down to defeat, which Egypt could see. So God says in verse 3, "Consider Assyria, once a cedar in Lebanon," once, because it's gone now, 605, and we're in 586, the famous Battle of Carchemish wiped out what was left of Assyria. "Once a cedar in Lebanon," Assyria was. Now, of course, Assyria wasn't really in Lebanon. Well, Assyria had captured Lebanon, but the references to the cedars in Lebanon, that's one of the most common metaphors in the Old Testament. I'd like to see a cedar in Lebanon. I've read about them so many times. So Assyria was a cedar in Lebanon with beautiful branches overshadowing the forest. It towered on high, its top above the thick foliage. The waters nourished it. That would be the waters of the river Tigris. Nineveh was on the Tigris River. It was on the east bank of the Tigris, and the present Iraqi city of Mosul is on the west bank. The traffic by that river made Assyria great, the trade. So the waters nourished Assyria by feeding the capital city Nineveh with traffic from the Tigris River. And I would say also, although my commentators didn't say it, at least not the ones I read, that the canals cut from the Tigris River into the Mesopotamian Valley there to provide agriculture. That probably is being referred to here as waters which nourished Assyria. Deep springs made the big tall tree of Assyria grow tall. Their streams flowed all around its base and sent their channels to all the trees of the field. So it's not just the mariners on the Tigris River making money, but also the common people got their bread from the waters that were cut through those channels. Verse 5, "So it," the big tree of Assyria, "towered higher than all the trees of the field." The trees of the field there represent all of the constituent kingdoms of the Assyrian Empire, represented poetically by trees. "The Assyrian tree's boughs increased and its branches grew long, spreading because of abundant waters." Again, the channels on the Tigris River are mentioned as nourishing the kingdom. "All the birds of the air nested in its boughs. All the beasts of the field gave birth under its branches. All the great nations lived in its shade." It takes a big tree to do all that. To take care of the birds in the air, to take care of the beasts on the field underneath the birds. "And the great nations lived in its shade," because all the nations were governed by the Assyrian tree. Verse 7, "It," this Assyrian tree, "was majestic in beauty with its spreading boughs, for its roots went down to abundant waters." There again is the metaphor of the waters. Verse 8, "The cedars in the Garden of God could not rival it." The Garden of God is the Garden of Eden, as the pulpit commentator says, and so does Charles Ellicott. Not only that, we can read at the end of verse 9, "The envy of all the trees of Eden and the Garden of God," is the Garden of Eden. And so now we ask ourselves, why are the other nations, the constituent nations of the Assyrian Empire, being compared to trees in the Garden of Eden? Well, the point is not that they were especially holy or sanctified, but rather that they were large and beautiful, because if you're in paradise, that's what Eden means, if you're in paradise, the trees there are going to look pretty good. And so God uses those beautiful trees in the Garden of Eden to show that even they weren't as great as Assyria was. Assyria was even bigger and better and more luxurious than a tree in the Garden of Eden. So let me read verse 8 again. The cedars in the garden of God could not rival it, could not rival the Assyrian tree, nor could the pine trees equal its boughs. Those are other subordinate trees, maybe other nations that are under Assyria. Nor could the plane trees compare with its branches. I'm not sure what a plane tree is. I think it's some kind of a poplar tree. No tree in the garden of God could match its, the Assyrian tree's, beauty. Verse 9, I made it, the beautiful Assyrian tree, beautiful with abundant branches. Notice that it was God that did it, even though Assyria was a nasty kingdom. But God is in control of history, so he was the one that did it. And the Assyrian tree was the envy of all the trees of Eden in the garden of God. So we go now to Ezekiel 31, verses 10 through 14. Therefore, this is what the sovereign Lord says, because it, that's Assyria, towered on high, lifting its top above the thick foliage, and because it was proud of its height, I handed it over to the ruler of the nations. Now, the ruler of the nations was Nebuchadnezzar. And in the first year of his reign, in 605, he conquered Assyria, the remnants of Assyria, at Carchemish, the famous battle of Carchemish that started his kingdom. That same year, Nebuchadnezzar came on down to Jerusalem and captured Daniel, carried him off into captivity in 605. So God, in verse 11, handed Assyria over to the ruler of the nations, over to Nebuchadnezzar, for him, Nebuchadnezzar, to deal with according to its, Assyria's, wickedness. I cast it aside, and the most ruthless of foreign nations, that would be Babylon, cut it down and left it. Its boughs fell on the mountains and in all the valleys. Its branches lay broken in all the ravines of the land. All the nations of the earth came out from under its shade and left it. Verse 12 is a reflection of verse 6. All the birds of the air nested in its boughs. Well, the boughs are now cut down in the ravines. All the beasts of the field gave birth under its branches. Well, the branches are all cut down now. And all the nations rested under its shade. Well, now all the nations of the earth came out from under its shade, in verse 12, and left it, because it's gone. Verse 13, all the birds of the air settled on the fallen tree. Remember, they were nesting in the branches of the tree. They're not up in the air anymore, they're on the ground. All the beasts of the field were among its branches. Instead of resting under its shade, giving birth, they're walking around, picking their way through the branches of the Assyrian Empire. Verse 14, therefore no other trees by the waters are ever to tower proudly on high, lifting their tops above the thick foliage. Now, that's true. After 605, Assyria disappears from history, never again to be heard from. And I can predict with a great deal of certainty there's not going to be a revived Assyrian Empire. So, starting over again at verse 14, therefore no other trees by the waters are ever to tower proudly on high, lifting their tops above the thick foliage. No other trees so well watered are ever to reach such a height. They are all destined for death, for the earth below, among mortal men, with those who go down to the pit. In other words, worldly empires, forget it. You're not going to last. That's a good application as we think about empires. Think about the old Russian Communist Empire. It's gone. China's trying to make an empire now, it won't last. Empires don't last. God doesn't let them last. We move now to Ezekiel 31, verses 15 through 18, and we will finish this chapter. This is what the Lord God says. I caused grieving on the day the cedar went down to Sheol. Day means the general time period of when Assyria went down. I mean, if you look at Assyria going down, they got their capital city, or one of their founding cities, Asher, went down in 614 to an alliance of Babylonia and the Medes, and then in 612, their capital city of Nineveh got destroyed by the Babylonians. And so a king of Nineveh ran to the west to Syria. He ended up getting beaten in 610/609 at the Battle of Haran, but there were still a few Assyrian troops left to try to make a last stand in 605, and Babylon knock them out. So they went down sort of slowly. You would think they would have gotten the message by then that their empire was toast. But that's not the way holders of imperial power do. Look at the time when the Byzantine Empire went down to the Turks in 1452, I believe the year was. They were just a little city behind the walls of Byzantium, present-day Constantinople, or present-day Istanbul. It was called Constantinople at that time. They should have realized they weren't an empire anymore. They were a city, but oh no, they had an emperor and they were the city and they'd been around for thousands of years and by golly, we're going to get somebody to help us to get out of this mess. Well, Assyria went down. Now in verse 15, on the day the cedar went down, the day doesn't mean a particular day, a 24-hour day. It just means in the general time period. God continues in verse 15, I closed off the underground deep because of it, because of Assyria that he wanted to take down. So he closed off the waters that were supporting Assyria, as we've talked about. The underground deep probably refers to springs running under the ground that fed the Tigris River or fed the channels and rivers that were branching off from the Tigris River and running into the Mesopotamian valley there. God says, I held back the rivers of the deep and its abundant waters were restrained. And so metaphorically, Assyria, which had been likened to a tree, can no longer grow. To remind us of this water metaphor, let's look back at verse 4 in this chapter, Ezekiel 31. The waters caused it, that's the big tall cedar of Assyria, the waters caused it to grow. The underground springs made it tall, directing their rivers all around the place where the tree was planted and sending their channels to all the trees of the field. So no more water, no more agriculture. No more water, the tree can't grow. So poetically, there's no more water in the Tigris River to provide merchants to trade with Assyria. Continuing in verse 15, I, God speaking, made Lebanon mourn on account of that Assyrian tree that went down. Why would Lebanon be mourning for what happened to Assyria? Well, this is a poetical reference, not a geographical reference. Lebanon had a bunch of cedars, and all of a sudden the biggest cedar of them all went down. So all the cedars are saying, oh, our fellow cedar has bit the dust. All the trees of the field fainted because of it, because of the big tall tree of Assyria going down. They're probably thinking, well, if Assyria goes down, that big old cedar goes down, we can go down too. Verse 16, I made the nations quake at the sound of its downfall when I threw it down to Sheol to be with those who descend to the pit. Sheol, of course, is death. The pit is a grave. And so Assyria is headed to the grave. And of course, all the nations are going to be quite shook up about that. I would think they'd be happy about it, but no, when big political events happen, everybody shakes. After all, Assyria's down, but Babylon's coming, so all the constituent nations like Ammon and Moab and Syria and Israel and all the other nations have to deal with Babylon now. But at any rate, this is just to show that something big has happened and everybody's shaking. Well, the tree, Assyria, goes down to Sheol, into the underworld, to death. Then all the trees of Eden, all the well-watered trees, the choice and best of Lebanon, were comforted in the underworld. So here's a poetic reference to the trees of Eden, those beautiful trees, and also the best trees of Lebanon, those beautiful cedars. They were comforted. Why? Because the nasty Assyrians have gone down. But they're in the underworld. Verse 17, they too descended with it, with the Assyrian tree, to Sheol, to those slain by the sword, as it, the Assyrian trees, allies, they had lived in its shade among the nations. So they were glad that Assyria went down, but unfortunately they went down with it, and so they're in Sheol, just like Assyria was. Verse 18, Yahweh continues, who then are you like in glory and greatness among Eden's trees? He's talking to Pharaoh now. You also will be brought down to the underworld, and that's Pharaoh Hophra. You also will be brought down to the underworld to be with the trees of Eden. All those nations that were in the Assyrian Empire. You will lie among the uncircumcised with those slain by the sword. The uncircumcised, of course, are the heathen who got killed in war. They're down in Sheol, Hades, in the underworld, dead. This is Pharaoh and all his hordes, the declaration of the Lord God. And that's Pharaoh Hophra. His dates are from 589 to 570 B.C. He ruled Egypt. So he's got about another 16 years to go before Ezekiel's prophecy is fulfilled, but it was. What happened was is he tried to invade Libya with a bunch of mercenary troops. That was sometime before 570. I forgot the exact date. He got whipped, fled, tried to come back with some more mercenary troops later, fought Amasis II, lost. He was either killed in that battle in 570 or he was restored to power, and then the people said, no, we don't want him anymore. Let's get rid of him. At any rate, Pharaoh Hophra is gone in 570. And so Ezekiel's prophecy is fulfilled, and we are now finished with Ezekiel 31, and prepare to go to, in our next audio, Ezekiel 32, which we will call a lament over Pharaoh in Egypt. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.